Okay, today's daf, Rabbos, I'm Moadim LeSimcha. Today's daf in Masechet Ketuvot, brought to you from Yerushalayim, Yir HaKodesh, is daf Kuf, and we're holding at the Halakha Mishnah, right on Tzaditet Amud Beit at the bottom. So we've been talking about mistakes. These are mistakes in Shuma. So if the Almanah sold, or if the Shliach sold, or if Bezdin sells and they make a mistake. Or we discuss cases where they exceed their authority, which might be a completely different issue. And we also decided that there's a big difference between an individual who makes a mistake in selling karkaot, where we say ein ona ala karkaot, Masha Inkin, when somebody appointed a shliach, then we say, the person can tie it. It has nothing to do with ona. It has to do with the fact that you got a lousy deal. And when I made you a shliach, I didn't make you a shliach to mess me up. I made you a shliach to get me the best possible deal. Therefore, we have very different standards when it comes to a shliach, when it comes to the individual himself. Now, it turns out that within those standards, we have other considerations. Namely, if the person who is acting as a shliach is acting on behalf of themselves as a shliach, now that's the case of the almona that's selling, correct? An almona that's selling, I mean, over there, she's looking to get the kind of deal that's going to be good for her. And since she is involved, we might have much higher standards when we're talking about the tikkuni shel artikel la'avati. So what we're going to be establishing today are the different levels of hakpada. And it turns out that it's not necessarily the same when a person makes a mistake in issues of real estate, a court makes a mistake in issues of real estate, a shliach of an individual makes a mistake in real estate, a shliach of a court makes a mistake in real estate, or an individual acting on behalf of themselves who was allowed to act, but nonetheless can only act within the overall descriptions of the nature of their shlichut, such as the case of the almana. So today the Gemara entertains the question of what happens if a court actually makes a mistake. Now remember that when we're talking about the court, we mean over here a court of mumchim, and not the court that we've been assuming exists all along, where there's always going to be a shuma, even when the almana is selling, as the Rif points out. She can't sell on her own without any kind of standards as to the value. But those are not called bezdin. Technically they're bezdin because they're three people, but they're actually assessors. So they're a group of shamaim that come to a conclusion. But the general halakhas of bezdin making a mistake, and whether it's dinis chayzer and teyeh b'dvar mishnah and stuff like that, does not apply to them. And note that we have Alon here on his something or other, who knows what he's driving. But whatever it is, he's out and I'm speaking for him because he wants to invite everyone to the Shir on Hashana Rabbah, Leil Hashana Rabbah, on his roof sukkah. So you're welcome, please, to show up on Caspi Street. I'll be posting everything so that you can all see it, but we'll also have it on Zoom. And therefore, those of you who might have a hard time making it in time from Joburg, you know, right after Shabbos, they hit the sukkah, you'll be able to tune in from Zoom. And you know what? We've even got Zoom for people who live so far away that they're in Beit Shemesh. So they can also come by Zoom. Yes, indeed. Okay, the only one who can't come by Zoom, apparently, is Yaakov Kleinman, because he can't appear because he's got no camera. So it looks like he's going to have to show up.
Okay, it's a magical sukkah. Everybody can just arrive from wherever they come from.
Yeah, all right. Open yes, all I time. Should. I should just mention
flying
that
on whatever they're flying on.
There's a helicopter pad. There's everything that you need right there on the Rogoff rooftop sukkah. Just please don't land on the schach. That could be a tragic kind of accident. Anyway, so we start the Mishnah. Today's daf from the Masechet Ketuvot is daf Kuf, and we're starting the Halakha Mishnah on Tzaditet, Shum HaDayanim. So up until now, we were talking about the Almana. Now we're talking about the case where we have the Dayanim themselves, and these were the people who had actually made this appraisal, and they made a mistake. And the mistake that they made, now this is fascinating, because generally speaking, we don't talk about the sixth, which is the common nature of ona'a in things that are not real estate. But over here, because we're talking about Beit Din, we give them up to a sixth in order to allow them a little bit of leeway, as we're going to see. And nonetheless, if it's a toes of a sixth, even though it's a bezdin, michran batel. Reb Shimon Gamliel says, no, that's not so. Michran kayam. Because, I mean, if you're going to treat them in such a way that we could simply be mevatel, a court's determination, so that in kein makor beit din yafer. I mean, you can't, isn't that the whole point? Is that a court is given a right to actually define things. So what's the point of going to Besdin if you're going to be able to tell them that they're no different than any shmo? Avalim asui geret bikoret b'neim. However, now the word b'neim doesn't make much sense over here. I mean, you know, it's probably geret bikoret without b'neim, but whatever, we can make it fit. If they sent out a public letter, now remember, any of you who like to go to auctions or book auctions and things like that, as you know, before the auction, you're given an opportunity to inspect what it is that you're going to be buying, and therefore you can make an accurate estimation of what you're ready to offer. So that's in the Geret Bakoret, where you announce that there's going to be an auction at such a time, and you invite people to come in, take a look at it, and make a bid. So if the Besdin did that, so then that means that they got the best possible price. Because, I mean, they, as we're going to see, this is a long, drawn-out kind of thing where it's almost impossible for anyone to have missed it. It was put into the magazines and so on. So over there, afilu mochru shava mona b'matayim, or shava b'matayim mona, even if they made a mistake of 100%, nonetheless, michran kayyam, because in that case, they got basically the best price that they could have. Okay, now, the question is, what is the din of a shliach? I mean, we've talked about two extremes. One extreme was the almana who's doing things for herself. The other extreme is when there's a bezdin that's involved. Now, there's obviously things between those two extremes. There's a shliach that somebody sends and empowers to make a deal for him. And there's even a shliach of Besdin, which, of course, might have some of the special considerations that the Besdin itself has. And the question over here is a shliach. What would be the din of a shliach? Would we be able to say that? This doesn't seem to make much sense as a question, right? Didn't we say before that the din, we already established what the din of a shliach is? We said that a shliach, the mishalech, can always taina, and if that's the case, why are we raising the issue again and perhaps even contradicting what we said earlier? So Tosfos later says that he offers a number of different approaches to this. One is that we might be talking about bedavka shliach bezdin, as before when we answered Reb Nachum by saying the tikkuni, that was talking about a private shliach. So that's one possibility, that there is in fact a difference. Another possibility is that even though it might be talking about a normal shliach, which is the way Rashi learns it, that when we said before the tikkuni, we did not mean any little ta'ut. We meant shtut over there. And when we were machber on the almana, that's because, as the Gemara is going to explain later, the almana is in the worst possible extreme because she's not only acting as a shliach, but she's personally involved in the determination of the sale. So over there, we could be that we're makbid on anything. So it's not all that clear, but it's Mashmah and Rashi, we're talking about any shliach. So that's the question. How do we treat the mistake of a shliach? So we have a machlokas between Rava and Rishmul Bar Bisna as to how Reb Nachman paskened in this issue. And as I mentioned before, we said that Reb Nachman was the one who was koveya, the halacha of a shliach being not nogea dinam of ona'a because of a tikkun ishadarticha. Nonetheless, as I just explained, Tosis gives us three options for understanding why that is not necessarily applicable in this case. So Rava said that what Reb Nachman said in this case is that the shliach has the same din as the court. Now that may be talking about, remember, according to one sheet, the shliach of a court has the same din as a court. But according to Rashi, it's mashma, any shliach has the din of a dayan. And Reb Shmuel Bar Bisna claimed that Reb Nachman Paskin, that a Shmuel has the same din as the almanah, which means that any little mistake invalidates everything, not the mistake of a sixth, which is the standard mistake of Ona'ah. So apparently, what we need to say in the Mishnah is that the truth is that in being koveya the din, similar to the din of Ona'ah, we are not arguing with the question of whether yesh Ona'ah b'karka'ot. The Gemara never refers to the machlokas of Reb Shimon ben Gamliel in our Mishnah and the Tanakama as being nogeya the question of whether there is Ona'ah in real estate. So where do we come up with this weird 1/6? Because 1/6 is standard Ona'ah, which is not applicable to real estate. So then the point is that the Tanakam and Reb Shimon ben Gamliel do not fundamentally disagree about the fact that a Beis Din needs to be given a special leeway because of the fact that they're a Beis Din. And the Tanakam agrees that in Kemakor Beis Din Yofeh. And the only question is how much we're willing to go. So if we're going to give additional leeway, so what the Tanakhama says is that leeway should be limited by standards of Ona'ah in other things. But it's not because of Yesh Ona'ah b'karka'ot. It's because Dayanim are essentially acting as the shluchim of the individuals that they're doing it for. And therefore, if it wouldn't be for the special status of Beis Din, then they would have had the din of any other shliach. Whereas Reb Shimon ben Gamliel says you can't give them any kind of standards unless total. It's completely off the wall of the actual market value, 100% or more, as we're going to see later, which is the mashmaut of the Mishnah, filu mochru matayim lamon, and so on. Okay, so let's take a look at the reasoning behind this. Rava says that what Reb Nachman said was that shliach is kedayanim. Why? Because the shliach and the dayanim are similar in the sense that they have no personal interest in this. Therefore, we have less of a chashash of some aspect of prejudicial thinking. And because of that, so that's the standard. It's only the almanah who is acting on her own benefit. Over there, we had this very special hakpadah, which can't get away with anything, and that he can claim right off, listen, you only had a right to sell shalom if they best, then because of the special status of an almanah that was given as a shlichut. However, you certainly do not have any leeway in making mistakes. That's the svara of Reb Nachman, according to Rava. And this is coming to be excluding the one case, which is the case of the almanah, where she's acting on her own behalf, which is the Ladida. Reb Shmuel Bar Bisna says, no, that was not what Reb Nachman said. And Reb Nachman said something entirely different. He said that a shliach is like an almanah, because the point of the problem of the almanah not having leeway is because she's acting as a single individual. There's not any kind of official position. Now, it's true that, as we've explained, the Rif said that she has to get a professional estimation, but that doesn't change the fact that in the end, she is the one who is a yechida, and these so-called dayanim, or estimators, are not really dayanim. So they're also sort of yechidim. They're acting as private individuals. And so is a shliach. Masha Inkein, we were talking about a Beit Din, like in our Mishnah, there we're talking about a rabbim, and that's why even the Tanakhama agrees, we've got to give them more leeway. You cannot treat a Beis Din just like anybody else. Halacha is that the shliach is the same as the almanah and has no room for making any kinds of errors. In other words, we're going according to Reb Shmuel Bar Bisna. That's the way he quoted Reb Nachman, and that's the way that the Gemara paskens. Asks the Gemara now that the question is, if you say that the halacha shliach is kalmanah, then how do you explain the Mishnah that we had yesterday? We talked about the Mishnah in Trumot, in which somebody says, who's not muted over here? Richie. How do you like that? I guess he wanted to bring us some very special mashka. And was just saying L'chaim. I didn't pick up the L'chaim. As soon as you mentioned Talisker, he goes blank. Look at that. So, how do we explain Moshe Forman's favorite Mishnah. This is the Mishnah back in Masechet Trumot, which we just learned yesterday. Are you going to release Gavi, or you're keeping him in your computer so that he can't attend? Because if you don't release him, you're going to have to do all of the writing down of the Yesodos, you understand. No more throwing things on a shliach, where if he makes the slightest mistake, it's all possible. You're going to have to be sevel up to a shtus. And that's really a lot of stupidities. If those shtusim get into your cards, we're in big trouble. So why is this different from the Mishnah in Trumot? In Trumot, it says, you said to a shliach, take off truma, and you didn't say how much truma. So over there, the halacha is that the shliach, he could take off what he considers to be what the individual would have wanted. Remember that we have three options. We have the beinonit, which is what you're supposed to do if you don't know what you're doing, because you don't really know the guy, so you can't estimate what kind of character he is. And if he's a generous person, then he would usually give a 40th. If he's a sort of stingy kind of guy, then he would give a 60th. And if you don't know, you're supposed to take off the middle. So the standard is 1 out of 50. So the Mishnah says over there, you can actually use your knowledge of the guy's character and give according to what you think he would have wanted to give, since he didn't tell you. But if you don't know the man, so then you take the standard, which is beinonitecha b'chamishi. But the question over there is that the Mishnah continues, and how about if you didn't take the 1 out of 50, and you went ahead and you were pichet asara, ohosif asara, you gave instead echad mi'arba'im or echad mishishim. So it says that the truma is still good. So you see that we do not consider a shliach to be canceled just because he made a small little mistake. He's got a big, well, it's not that big, but he certainly has room to maneuver. There's a big difference between echad b'chamishim and echad mishishim, or echad mi'arba'im. So how come the Mishnah says that a shliach does have room to maneuver, and you're saying that the shliach has no room to maneuver? Answers the Gemara, well, obviously, man. I mean, over there, there's a standard of truma. You can't say that, well, what do you mean? He just arbitrarily, he added. It's not the point. There is a standard truma of Ayin Ra. There's a standard truma of Ayin Yafa. And the guy can say, look, you know, so I made a mistake in your character. It's not as if I made this up or picked a rabbit out of a hat. I mean, I'm talking about a standard type of truma. So the question is, what hat we put you into? Okay, so I saw you wearing a kippah sruga. I didn't realize that on Shabbat you go around with a shtreimel, so I took you out of the wrong hat. But the bottom line is that it's still covered by the Mishnah. Of the standards, the three standards. But over here we're talking about hachata'uta, here we're talking about a mistake. And there the mishaleach can say, you had no right to make a mistake. I didn't make you shliach to make mistakes. I made you shliach to do a good job. Omer Rav Huna bar Chanina, Omer Rav Nachman. What about in terms of the machlokas here, whether a bezdin is given only the right to make a mistake of shtut, or Rav Shimon Gamliel says no, imkein makor bezdin yafe. Paskins Rav Huna bar Chanina that Rav Nachman said the halacha is like the chachamim, and you cannot make a mistake of the shtus, more than a shtus. Now, Wait a minute. Are you trying to tell me that Reb Nachman doesn't hold of Reb Shimon ben Gamliel's klal of imkein ma koach besin yafah? Reb Nachman was the one who was the most famous of people that would paskin that way, because he used to quote Shmuel on this. And he said, Am Reb Nachman, Am Shmuel, that where you have yitomim or ketanim, it's talking about where bo lachlo benichse abihim, so they want to divide up an estate. So the Besdin makes for each one of them a separate apotropos. What's the word in English again for an apotropos? A guardian, right? So they appoint for each one of these kids a particular guardian who takes responsibility as a court-appointed legal guardian. And they fight it out between themselves. So if there's three of them, you've got three of these guys, adults, that are going to take the side of their particular yatom. And then borerim lem chelek yafel. It's a big question over here, borerim, because as Tosis points out, borerim seems to definitely be saying that it is not done on the basis of a goral. You can't randomly, because otherwise, if it were done on a goral, then there's nothing to be borer. And the goral is borer. But that they would fight it out. Okay, there may be cases where it's not like that, and Tosis goes through a lot of different possibilities, but certainly there can be cases where they need to be borer. Now, here is the point where we get to Makor Besdin Yafa. So the Tanakama says that when these Ketanim grow up, they can say, we don't like the way that this, my guardian didn't do a good job, he did not properly select for me, I want out. I say we go back to the drawing boards and we work this out between us or we go to court. Yecholim limcha, so they can say they want to redo it. Reb Nachman, now here's the problem. Reb Nachman over here who paskened that the halacha is not like Reb Shimon ben Gamliel and that we only give you up to shtus. And Reb Shimon ben Gamliel was the one who said, im kein makor besin yafeh. And Reb Nachman says, we don't pasken like that. What Reb Nachman says over here is exactly that. Higdilu, once they grow up, they cannot demand a redone chalukah. Because it came makor besdin yafeh. Does he hold a makor besdin yafeh? Does he not? So he's the one that basically is famous for that. Why does he not pasken like Reb Shimon ben Gamliel? Answers the Gemara. There's a big mistake of here. I mean, remember, Reb Nachman didn't say that they made a mistake. All he said was that if they complain, they cannot demand a redone chalukah. In our Mishnah, what do you mean? I don't like it. They made a clear-cut technical error, and they were teya ad shtus. There's a big difference between those two cases. You mean they didn't make any mistake? So then why exactly are they complaining? I mean, they must have some basis for coming along and saying, I want a different chalukah. So how can you say they didn't make any kind of mistake if they were lo tohu, ida lo tohu b'mayacholin limchot? So I understand. These kids are coming along now to protest. He did a lousy job. Can you tell us what the lousy job is? We just had it assessed, and it comes in exactly the way that your guardian said. So then why in the world would anybody say that we could even entertain a notion that we should redo it? Does it make sense? No, it makes sense because not value, but ruchot. Let's imagine a situation where one of these ketanim has a different mother than the others, and he inherited through his mother an adjacent field. But the problem is it's not adjacent. Because it should have been adjacent if they had selected the side that was closer to that field for him. And that wasn't taken into consideration, he says. And they didn't realize that my mother owned an adjacent property. She could have died and left this to me. And therefore, I want to reopen the situation. Okay, so he has valid reason for reopening it, but he's not claiming that there was an error. And in the case where there's no error, there Reb Nachman says, you can't just, because it's more convenient for you, you can't just dismiss a court decision about how it is to split things based on guardianship. Okay, that makes a heck of a lot of sense. So now let's get back to the question of the halacha. So how do we paskin? Do we paskin like the Chachamim, or do we paskin like Reb Shimon ben Gamliel, that im kein makor besdin yafeh, and we should allow the Besdin a greater leeway in making an error than we would allow anyone else who's a shliach? Well, when Rav Dimi came to Bavel, he reported that there was a maisa back in Eretz Yisroel while I was there, that Rebbe did like the Chachamim against Rebbe Shimon ben Gamliel. And he paskened that you are actually going to cancel the Maisa Besdin if they made a mistake on more than a shtus. And what happened was, said Reb Dimi, that Prata, who is a son of Reb Elozer ben Prata, this Reb Elozer ben Prata was the son of Rebbe Prata HaGadol, So that means that this the son of Reb Elazar ben Prata was a grandson of Rebbe Prata HaGadol. And he said to Rebbe, how can you just void a court agreement based on a court-appointed guardianship if then you're not giving them any more power than you would anybody else? I mean, Makor Bezdin Yofa, if you're going to do that. And when Rebbe heard, now of course, those are the words that Reb Shimon Gamliel says, and when Rebbe heard those words, he flipped the verdict. Hirzir Rebbe Atamase. And he realized that he had made a mistake. Reb Dimi says, this is the way I think this would happen. But Reb Safra says, no, it's not quite this way. Reb Safra says, you're close, Reb Dimi, but you misrepresented a little thing. Rebbe never actually had paskin this, and he was thinking about it. That's what happened. So he said, you know what? It seems to me that we should go like the Chachamim, and we should cancel the sale. So then, this is how Reb Safran is advised, so be cage, Rebbe. Rebbe was only entertaining that he ought to paskin that way. And at that point came along Prata, the grandson of Rebbe Prata Gadol, Prata Benosha Rebbe Elazar ben Prata, Ben Benosha Rebbe Prata Gadol, and said his words to Rebbe, which were basically a quote from Shimon Gamliel, Imkein Makar Bezdin Yafeh, and Rebbe didn't do it. So the difference between Reb Dimi's version and Reb Safra's version is minor. According to Reb Dimi, Rebbe had already paskened that the halacha was to be mevatel the sale, and according to the way Reb Safra said it, Rebbe was only thinking about canceling the sale, but hadn't actually done it. So, I mean, what are they arguing about? The difference between Reb Dimi and Reb Safra. So, apparently, this is an interesting machlokes, because the question over here is, what is the din about a toeh bidvar mishnah? So, a toeh bidvar mishnah, the halacha is, the way we paskin anyway, a toeh bidvar mishnah is actually chozer. If you make a mistake in which it's a shikol hada'at, so then if your shikol hada'at was wrong, then you, the dayan, have to take responsibility for it, and you could pay the guy back for your mistaken shikol hada'at, but you cannot reverse your decision, because, you know, I mean, if it's just a judgment issue, so in what sense is it reversible? Because you now decided you were wrong, and what if tomorrow you now decide that you were originally right and now you're wrong? So you can't reverse it, but you'll have to pay if you believe you were wrong. You have to compensate the guy for stealing his field, so to speak, by making an error of judgment. But if it's something that is so absurd that it actually cancels what it says beferish in a Mishnah, then if that's the case, it has no meaning at all what you paskin. It was such a egregious error that it just doesn't have any legal standing at all. So that seems to be the machlokas over here, because here Rebbe was going to go against Rebbe Shimon ben Gamliel in the Mishnah. And Rebbe Shimon ben Gamliel, when he explains Imkein Makor Bezdin Yafeh, if Rebbe made the mistake about Imkein Makor Bezdin Yafeh until Rebbe Prata brought it up, so then he was a Torah Bidvar Mishnah. And if he was a Torah Bidvar Mishnah, even if he had already paskined that we should cancel the sale, it doesn't matter, because you can reverse a mistake in a Mishnah. So Rav Dimi, who says that it actually happened, that Rebbe had to reverse it, that's because he holds that, yes, it's true that a Torah Bidvar Mishnah actually is chozer. And that's what happened. Masha Enkein, it would appear, that Rav Safra, who says, no, he was only thinking about it. Why did Rav Safra have to say that? Because Rav Safra held, if he would have actually done it, it's not considered to be reversible, because he doesn't hold of the Din of Torah Bidvar Mishnah. Is that the explanation of the Machlokas? No, says, I understand. Two people told you different stories. Are they telling you that I made up the story according to what I believe? They're telling you two different stories. That's the question. What happened? I'm not telling you why it happened. What happened? So it could be that everybody agrees that, of course, the klal is tovid v'amish to choser, and if Rebbe had actually canceled the sale, he would have been able to undo that because it was a tosfot bar mishnah, and there is no machlokas. It's just that mar savar hachi avi maisa, mar savar hachi avi maisa. It's just a question as to what the accurate description is of what happened, but not whether there's a real machlokas about whether it could have happened the other way. It could have happened the other way. Big deal. Omer of Yosef. Now, if an armalta sells, this is something we've discussed numerous times before. An almana sells. Now, the sale is like any other sale, and it includes property insurance. Now, what happens if the property that she sold is taken away from the buyer of the property because her late husband owed money? And he found this field. He went after it. He took it away from the buyer. Now the buyer activates his insurance policy. He comes back to the seller and says, okay, somebody came along and took away it. You gave me title insurance. I want my money back. Who does he go to? Well, he doesn't go to her because she was acting as an agent of the Atomim, really, who owed her the money that she went to collect. So that would mean that even though there's an insurance policy for the title, but the Yatomim are the ones that are going to take the loss, obviously, because they were the one that were anyway responsible from the property that daddy left them to pay their mother's ketuvah. And what's more, if a Beis Din sells, that's also true. It's not the Beis Din that is providing the insurance, the title insurance. It's the Yatomim. I mean, isn't that obvious? I mean, well, if I'm doing a shlichut for the Yatomim, so I should be the one that covers the property insurance. What's going on? Obviously. Okay, let me explain to you. It's true that what you're thinking is obvious, but there's another issue over here that you're not realizing, okay? The part about the almana is obvious. And the only reason we mention it is just to put everything together. The almana didn't need to be mentioned because, of course, she's acting totally as a shliach. And the truth is that the Beis Din is also totally acting as a shliach. And why would I think that the Beis Din would have to provide insurance? I didn't think that silly. What I thought was, is that if a Beis Din sells, there is no title insurance. Why would you think that? Oh, now I'll explain it to you. So the part that I need to know is that there is property insurance that will be covered by the Yatomim. Why do I need to know that? Because Ma'odatema, I would have thought, you know what? If a court sells, so then anybody who buys from the court does not think that he requires title insurance. And therefore, it's not automatically supplied as part of the sale. Why? Because Adaita Lamefik like Kalohu Dizovin, he is, now there's two different Girsaot here. The Girs that I just read you is Adaita Lamefik like Kalohu. If you take a look in Rashi, you'll see that Rashi says Adaita Dinafik like Kalohu Dizovin. And there's a big difference between those two Pshatim, possibly. And that is that if you're reading it the way Rashi has, he buys from a court because he knows that the court has gone through this whole long akhrizata of the auction, of the examination, and so on. By the time that period, we're going to see it's a long time. By the time that's over, anybody who is at all involved in the case, if he hears that Beis Din is selling it and he has objections, he would have already come forward and say, you can't sell that field. I have a previous lien on that field. So therefore, since I'm selling officially in court and nobody came forward, it's clear that there is nobody to come forward because it's too late to come forward afterwards. We say, well, why didn't you show up before? So therefore, I don't need property insurance. That's why it says over here, Afal Pikein, Kamash Malan, that there is, in fact, title insurance and that the Yatomim will cover that title payout if the insurance has to pay out. And the other Lashon, which says Adaita, that's our Lashon. Some understand that to mean Adaita Lemefak Leikala. The reason he went to Beis Din is because when you're in court, everybody's talking about you, right? So, like, Musk never thought that the feds are going to come after him. You know, they forgot that it's a police state over there. So he thought, man, what better way to become famous than to put in a $44 billion bid on Twitter? Okay, great. So now he's like, everybody knows I am the world's richest, so on, right? So it's worth it for him because people will be talking about him. He gets a reputation of being a big guy. And that's lemefakli kala. He wants to get out a reputation. That's what some learn. All right. So it's worth it for him to buy without title insurance. I don't like that trap. But anyway, let's go. Reb Shimon Gamliel. So now let's think about what Reb Shimon Gamliel said. Reb Shimon ben Gamliel said, "Im kein makor pesdin yafa." So does that mean like they could do anything? And even if they made more than a shtus and up to what? I mean, more than a shtus, what is that? Like 50%, 60%? I mean, how high can you go? So viad kama, do we allow any type of ta'ut? Omer vunabar yuda, omer of sheshes. Well, I mean, if you take a careful look at the Mishnah, it's pretty clear, isn't it? It's up to 100%, right? Which is up to half of the sold value, because that's really what the Mishnah said. Tanya Nami Yachin. Omer of Shimon Yomil, based in Shemoku, Shove Matayim Bemana, or Shove Mana Bematayim. Now that seems to be his max, is 200, they sold for 100, or vice versa. Then it's a good sale. Omer Amemar Mishmeder of Yosef is another issue over here. If a Besdin sells without a public auction, then that is the equivalent of a Teyeh B'Dvar Mishnah. And therefore, the sale is canceled immediately because they have to sell with Hachroza. What are you talking about? They're as if it's a Teyeh B'Dvar Mishnah. They're not as if, honey. They are as exactly that. The Mishnah says, what do you mean as if? There's no if, ands, or buts. They are a Torah B'Dvar Mishnah. Read the Mishnah, darn it. Vareto. It's not, listen, here's the Lashon of the Mishnah Nerechin. It says, Shuma Yitomim Shloshim Yom. When you're selling things that belong to, in court, you're selling things that belong to the heirs who are Yitomim, you have to have at least 30 days of advance advertisements, the New York Times, putting up the things all over Mea Shorim, that whoever doesn't show up is dead and is considered to be a violator of the Torah, and so on, whatever. So you've got to make sure that everybody hears about it, right? So is that pretty clear? I think so. So what are you telling me? They are as if they were a Teyeh B'Dvar Mishnah. They threw this Mishnah out. And they went right ahead and they did not do the 30 days of the requirement. And if they're selling things that belong to Hagdash, then you need to advertise for a full 60 days because over there, you're taking Kedusha away from it because it goes into the hands of Chulin. So fine, but 30 days, they needed to advertise. If they didn't do it, they were over on the Mishnah. So what's the Maimer saying? It's as if. It's not as if. It's only as if. You know why? Because if you want to tell me on the basis of that Mishnah that we would cancel the sale, it's not true. Because it doesn't say who's selling. It says over there, in the event that you are selling, that you are selling, could be referring to a shliach. But maybe a Besdin has a right to make an assessment and to make a sale because of the fact that they're so expert to make a sale without having a public hachraza for 30 days. That's what I would have thought. So a Maimar is coming to tell me, listen, it's the same as the case. So that means even though the Mishnah didn't exactly say that it's this case, and you would say, okay, so you're claiming it's in the Mishnah and they're claiming it's not in the Mishnah. So you can't call it a Torah B'Dvar Mishnah, right? Because it's a Torah and how to understand the Mishnah. Says Amema, no. It's as if it were Beferish in the Mishnah. There's no room for doubt about this. Says the Gemara, what do you mean? How can you say there's no room about it if our Mishnah says that there is room? Take a look at our Mishnah. Yisrael Rashi Amema. Shum Adayanim Shepichat Tushtut Oshot Yirushtut michron batel, but it's only because they made a mistake of a shtut. Suppose they didn't make any mistake. Do we say immediately ipso facto it's canceled because they didn't have a hachroza? It says it's batel because they undervalued it, right? Hashava b'shava, but if it would be the correct price, then we would say michron kayem. I'm assuming that that's talking about, why I'm assuming that, we'll see in a minute, but I'm assuming that it's talking about that there was no kind of achraza, and it says that it's a good sale, as long as they didn't make a mistake. So how can the Mishnah, how can a Maimar claim that the Mishnah in Erechin is telling you that it's preferish, not a kosher sale? Obviously, our Mishnah disagrees. I don't understand, says Gemara. Well, you say that it's talking about that they didn't do achraza. What makes you say that? I say they did do achraza. Hello? Bini achruz. Oh, you don't know how to think. Because look at the next part of the Mishnah. The next part clearly is talking about where there was achraza, right? Because if the last part talks openly about achraza, and therefore it's different than the first part, so the first part was talking about without achraza. Remember the closing of the Mishnah? Imasui Geret Bikoret, that if they had sent out a public letter about the auction and they made days available where people could come and look and can see how much it's worth, so then even if they made a mistake of Shavamona Bimataim or Shavamataim Bimona, the Mecher is Kayam. So then it's contrasting the case of Achraza to the opening case of the Mishnah, which is clearly without Achraza. Don't give me this stuff. Our Mishnah is talking about without achraza. And our Mishnah says that without achraza, if you don't make a mistake, the sale is a good sale. So where's a Maimar come off claiming that it's considered to be the Teya Bidvar Mishnah and that the sale is not a good sale? That's a problem. Okay, I got a solution. I admit that you're right. You're definitely right. The Mishnah is talking about a case without achraza, but you know what? It's not a problem because even though there is a din of achraza, we do learn that there are some things that we do not do achraza on. And that's what we're talking about over here. We're talking about things that are not supposed to be sold by achraza. So a Maimar is talking about normal things. Shemachrizin aleihem. Our Mishnah is talking about that these were things that you normally would not be machris. Like what? Like if you're selling slaves, or you're selling anything that's metaltalin, or you're selling bonds. And why would we not make an auction? I don't understand. Avadim time am I? Well, that's because since everybody is talking about the upcoming sale and people are coming to inspect them, let's take a look at those abs, you know. So now the Eved recognizes that he is about to be sold. Well, he doesn't like the face of the people that are becoming looking at his abs. He wants out. So what does he do? He runs away. You know, I've been having a great time over here and living with the Rogovs. They dragged me along to Yerushalayim, gave me a color TV. Now, who knows who's going to be taking me? I'm out of here. So because of that, we cannot do a hachraza, because he might escape. And the reason that we don't want to do achraza metatalim mishtarot is because who do you think are the first people to listen to the radio's lists of public auction? The mafia. So the next thing you know is you list this is going to be auction and it's stolen. So you can't do that. Shema yiganevu. Anyway, that's one approach. And Amema was talking about things, of course, that are standard. Our Mishnah wasn't. Or I can say there's also another possibility. There are certain times that we do achraza, and that's what Amemar is talking about, but there's certain times that we don't do achraza. We already know what those times are. Thinky, thinky, thinky. We spoke about this before, remember? What happens in cases where the husband died and now we need to sell quickly in order to cover funeral expenses? Or we talked about what happens if the government is coming down claiming that you owe a big tax bill, and if it isn't paid in the next 24 hours, it's going to double. What happens then? Do we take a 30-day achraza and have to pay double? Of course not. Do we delay the funeral for 30 days? Of course not. And do we, this, by the way, what it really meant is, just to remind you, is that even to say if you took a loan, we won't pay back the loan for 30 days. Even that we won't do, because it's going to make it hard to get the money. So in cases where the almana requires mizone to eat, what are we going to tell her? Why don't you take a diet for the next 30 days and don't eat anything? No, we're not going to do that either. So the karga, the mizone, and the kfura, mazbanina, below achrazata. Maybe that's what the Mishnah was talking about, where there was no chiyav of achraza. Or, so, there are three things we can do. We can change time. We can change space. And we can change the object in time space. So we started with the object, then we went to the time, and now we're going to the space. Could be the difference is, it depends where you are. So Maimar was talking about in a standard location where you actually do hakraza. So over there, if you didn't do hakraza, it's Torah Bidvar Mishnah, and it's Bata. But in our Mishnah, we're talking about the kind of place where they do not do hakrazot. And I know that there are kind of places like that, because Reb Nachman said, you know, I can tell you we never once issued an Igeret Bekaret Benarda. That's not what we do in these towns. Why is that? So everyone in the Beis HaMedrash thought that what Reb Nachman was saying is that since the Beis Din Narda are so expert at Shumot, so because of that, Bekiei B'Shuma, we don't need any of these auctions. We could tell you exactly what it's worth. Omar lo Rabbi Yosef bar Amin, you may know, Reb Nachman himself explained to me why in Narda he never wrote one of those court orders. There is a big problem in Narda of a court-sponsored sale. If we advertise in Narda court-sponsored sale, nobody buys. Why? Because in Narda, people who buy at a court-sponsored sale are viewed as disgusting people. And some learn even their children are called the children of people who take advantage of these people destroyed by the court. I'm sure you've heard exactly these kind of emotive responses. Court goes in there, collects money from these poor yatomim that are supposed to be paying back a debt of their fathers. They force a sale of the property, leaving the yatomim bereft of property. And you jerk, you went ahead and you put in a bid for that, and you got the property stolen away from the yatomim, listening to these rabbis. How could you? Anyway, so basically, the very fact that the Beis Din would publicize the auction would destroy the bids. And therefore, it would bring down the price. So therefore, Narda, and as you know, Narda was like this very liberal place. Reb Nachman used to, you know, classic woke kind of society. Don't buy anything that the court is selling. Okay, so if that's the case, then we could not issue any Geret Bakoret in Narda. And that's because the Korlohu, B'nei Achle Nichsed Achrasta, they would call even their children. Oh, look at this. The people who live off of eating the intestines of these poor orphans. Anyway, Amr of Yudam Hashmo, when it comes to metaltaling of Yorsh, which are in danger always, metaltaling can be lost. They can be stolen. They can get wrecked. If they're perishables, for sure, then they could perish. So what's the din? Shaminotan mokrimotan la'altar. We do not allow any delay, and we brook no risks. If there's a chance that something will happen to them, then we have to sell immediately, even though, obviously, we could get a better price if we allowed a public auction. Or, best thing to do is take it to a location where everything's a public auction, so to speak. Take it to Machane Yehuda. Take it to the Shuk. And in the Shuk, you're going to have so much competition, whatever you can get for it. Okay, therefore, says Rav Yehuda, we don't do that. But Rav Chisda says that Avimi Paskin, it's not true. We wait to go to the Shuk. Now, they're not really arguing, because the principle is the same. we will not brook danger. But basically, it depends what type of danger we're talking about. If you, let's say you're within a couple of days of being able to go to Machane Yehuda, but that's every Monday and Thursday, right? So therefore, for that, we will delay. But if you've got to wait, let's say a week or a month in some places where they had the fairs, and that's where you would get all the people coming in who would bid up the price, then we don't. So basically, what all that they're saying is this machlokas of Shmuel and Avimi, all that they're arguing, and they're not arguing, all that they're pointing out is that you need to use your brains as to where exactly and when exactly you have to act precipitously, but there are no real machlokas here. And actually, there was a maizer, Rav Kahana. Rav Kahana had some beer, and it was beer that was owned by a yatom. It was the yatom of Rav Mesharsha Bachilkia. And he, nonetheless, he waited until Yontif, even though it would be possible that there would be deterioration in the quality of the beer until then. He said, even though sometimes you get some type of bad taste in it, it's still worth it. Because if you sell it at any other time, you basically are going to have to accept credit cards. Masha Einkein, if you sell it during the regal, there's so much competition, you can sell it for cash. So Maisi Zuzi Harifa. And I would rather get, Zuzi Harifa means actual currency that you're able to use on the spot. I would rather than do that than to have these orphans put into a position where now they're going to have to go collect the credit. That is not going to happen. So you see that there's a lot of factors that need to be taken into consideration here. Ravina Habibiyodech Amra, the Ravina Zutiyasma, who was Barachte Habi, Ravina had his nephews, his sister had a kid with the same name as his. So he had some wine that belonged to this kid. He had wine of himself. So he had Ravina wine and he had little Ravina wine. So now the question is, he was going to bring it to this special wine festival in the town of Sichra to sell it there. So he wanted to know, and he went to Rav Ashi to ask him, would I be allowed to take the little Ravina wine with me, or do I have to worry about the fact that the travel might end up in loss? Listen, I mean, sometimes they got to dump the wine to save the boat from the flooded river. I don't know. So do I have a right to take that risk? Because, I mean, the whole point over here is we brook no delay because we brook no risks. So is this called a risk? So Ma'olam Tuyibadam. So he went to Rav Ashi to ask him whether he has a right to bring it with him. Rav Ashi said to him, look, whatever is a good enough risk for you, and you're in the same business, and you're carrying the same wine, is a dumb question. Because when we say brook no, but what is, there's no such thing as no risk. So what we mean is we brook no additional risk. If you yourself are selling the same wine, and you think it's worth it, so why would you do less for them than you do for yourself? Which means you take the same risks for them as you take for yourself. And therefore, get out of here. Go, feel, go do it. Stop thinking about it so much. Lo adiv minida. You have to treat little Ravina's wine better than you treat big Ravina's wine.